and you're on the front porch. This week, we're talking about how childhood trauma can shape someone and what we can do to help kids become more resilient. Support for the Front Porch comes from the Pulitzer Prize-winning Charleston Gazette Mail, using its CGM app to deliver the latest in news, traffic, and weather. Check it out at Google Play or iTunes. That's the CGM app. And here to talk about dealing with some of these toxic traumas in childhood is the executive director for the Connaught Charleston Health Department. It's Dr. Mike Brummage. Dr. Brummage, thanks for coming. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Dr. Brummage is also newly appointed assistant dean for the WVU School for Public Health. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I'm Scott Finn, executive director here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, joined as always by Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee.
Hey, Scott.
Well, let's start with the basics here. There's this thing called ACEs, and this is basically a test and a score you can give to see how much childhood trauma someone experiences. What is ACEs and what does it mean?
Well, the original Adverse Childhood Experiences study was done in the late 1990s through the Kaiser Permanente in San Diego, California. This is a large health maintenance organization and done with middle-class Americans. And it's a large study done with over 17,000 beneficiaries of Kaiser Permanente. And what they really did was look at what experiences children had and how that affects health in adulthood. And what we're looking at in the original study are 10 different categories so that everybody would have an ACE score under this study between 0 and 10. Emotional, physical, and sexual abuse, emotional and physical neglect, one or more parents missing from the household, domestic violence specifically toward the mother, mental illness in the household, substance use in the household, and whether anyone in the household was incarcerated. 2/3 of the families had a score of 1 or more, and about 12.5% had a score of 4 or more. So to put that in perspective, if your ACE score is 4 or more, you're 12 times more likely to commit suicide. If your ACE score is 6 or more, on average, you're going to live about 20 years less, and you are 46 times more likely to use IV drugs than the people with a score of 0. Now, it's important also to remember that these are not predetermining factors. It's just a risk factor, and there are things you can do to mitigate it.
I think that there's an interesting story about how Dr. Felitti first came up with this, but he was studying people in a weight loss program, and there was someone who lost a lot of weight and then suddenly dropped out of the program. And the more he dug, he found out there was some trauma underneath that. I think that's good. Could you tell that story better than I just did, please?
Yeah. So Dr. Felitti tells this story very often, and it's about one specific patient. He was running a very successful weight loss program in San Diego where the average weight loss per patient was about 60 pounds. And one of the disturbing things he noticed about this weight loss program were that the people who were most successful at losing weight were the ones dropping out of the program the fastest. So he finally had a breakthrough with one of his patients. She had gone from nearly 400 pounds down to 135 pounds and dropped out of the program for several weeks. And when she showed back up after a few weeks, she had regained about 37 pounds, what Dr. Felitti describes as what he thought was impossible to do physiologically. And as he began to talk to her and really listen deeply to her story, what he discovered was that she had her weight gain as a child about the same time that she had been serially raped by her grandfather, and that the weight loss had been very empowering to her, but she was approached by what she had described as an older gentleman who said, "Hey, how about you and I hooking up?" And that sent her into a spiral where she would even sleep eat. In other words, she would go to bed, wake up in the morning, find all the cabinets had been opened in her kitchen, the food had been eaten, which she had obviously eaten but had no recollection of doing so. Looking beyond Patty's story, he began to ask deeper questions to all of his patients and began to draw some remarkable conclusions about the connections between different categories of childhood trauma and health outcomes as adults. And so there were correlations between adverse childhood experiences, or what I'll call ACEs, and obesity, ACEs and smoking, ACEs and depression, ACEs and suicidality. And in fact, there's a strong correlation between ACEs and every major public health problem that we face, not only in West Virginia, but across the United States.
In some ways, this is really revelatory, but in other ways, isn't it kind of obvious? Bad things happen to kids in childhood, and that affects them the rest of their lives, right? And the more bad things that happen to you, the more effects they have. How is this changing how people think in public health then? What's different?
So I think we have to really go backwards and look at the roots of what's really causing the problems. In public health, we often have programs that are important that intervene to stop certain outcomes. So for example, we have obesity reduction programs. We have smoking cessation programs. We have all kinds of programs that are specifically around the opioid epidemic that are trying to mitigate the effects. But the deep look is really looking backwards in time and what's happened to people that made them go down the pathway that they did in the first place.
One thing, you were responsible for bringing the original doctor who did the study here a year or so ago, and he said something that really struck me, is that a lot of these behaviors that might be sort of self-destructive or bad for health were, in a way, sort of adaptations that maybe help people get through a trauma. So like being obese was sort of protection against being sexually harassed.
He talked about these as being solutions to people's problems because, let's face it, there is a benefit of taking a hit of any kind of drug because it makes you feel better, at least for that long, for that short period. But over the long term, we all know that these behaviors are extremely bad for people and they have long-term consequences. But if we understand that these are attempts at solutions that people have to things that happen in their deep past, and when we try to take those things away, it should not surprise us in any way that people are not successful at quitting those behaviors because we're trying to take away their solution. So we have to also be able to offer something else different than what they're doing because that's a long-standing behavior for them. And that's a part of their brain that's been remodeled to want to do those things. So we have to be a little bit patient and look at it from that perspective. And really it changes everything when you look at that because what we're really doing is fundamentally taking away the notion that you're messed up. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with me? It's really what's happened to you. And when you ask a person what's happened to you, that's a fundamentally different question than what's wrong with you. And it provides a space, I think, for understanding and compassion the way that's what's wrong with you doesn't.
So how do you prevent that, Dr. Brummage, from becoming almost disempowering? I have drug problems or I'm overweight or, you know, I have an alcohol abuse issue. Well, but it's because I had these childhood traumas and that explains it. Therefore, I can't help myself or I can't do anything about it.
Well, I think none of this alleviates personal responsibility. That's my own opinion. And I think that's the perspective if you've read the book Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance. He talks about his own upbringing and how he has a score of 6 himself. And in fact, in the last chapter of his book, he talks about the Adverse Childhood Experiences study and grades himself out not only as a 6, but grades out all his relatives as well, which is particularly interesting. But the flip side of the story with J.D. Vance is that he joins the Marines. He goes on to graduate summa cum laude from Ohio State a year and a half early. He goes to Yale Law School. He becomes the editor for the Yale Law Review and ultimately becomes a successful attorney at an investment bank in Silicon Valley. By the way, he's since moving back to Middletown, Ohio to try to give back to that community in which he grew up. But the point is that he also talks about the role of personal responsibility. So while this provides a framework for understanding what happened to us, ultimately it's up to not only us as individuals, but the society that we live in, as well as the healthcare system, to understand that these are the things that help lead people into this mess that they're in, but it should be a motivation to try to understand and change things for the future.
Let's just talk really briefly about J.D. Vance. There are some things that can help protect kids who have high ACEs scores to maybe help them succeed. What protective factors did he have?
Well, his grandparents provided a little bit of stability for everything else that's going around. I think that's one thing, probably one of the key factors, right?
That was one of the key factors. He attributes really his success in life to two things. One is his older sister who kind of buffered him from a lot of the really more abusive settings that he found himself in. But the second thing were exactly what you said, Rick, which was his grandparents, his mamaw and papaw, specifically his mamaw because she lived longer and she was a very strong and forceful and could be actually violent person, but he had the sense that she would do anything to protect him. And it's that sense of psychological safety. So really what it all comes down to in terms of a mitigating factor, perhaps the strongest, nobody knows for sure, is the love and support of an adult who provides you with a sense of safety.
You've been listening to Dr. Michael Brummage of Connaught Charleston Health Department and new assistant dean for WVU School for Public Health about dealing with childhood trauma. When we come back, we'll talk more about how this affects West Virginia and what we can do about it. But first,
I'm Sarah Brown from Charleston. A lot of people in politics certainly want to control their own message, and so they're giving you their talking points, and it takes a really quality reporter to be able to say, what about this? What about that? I don't think that's true. This is the example I have. And public broadcasting reporters do that. They push their subjects to be able to really flesh out what the real situation is.
Protect West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Go to wvpublic.org.
Okay, we're back, and we're talking to Dr. Michael Brummage. He's the executive director for the Connaught Charleston Health Department and assistant dean at the WVU School for Public Health. So how does West Virginia stack up on some of these ACEs scores? How about the kids when they were studied?
So that was in 2016. So this is very recent data. It was just released within the past few weeks. And what they found out is that 52% of West Virginia children had a score of one or more by the age of five. So that is statistically above the national average. And the national average was about 46% of children had a score of one or more by the age of five. So West Virginia is above the national average, significantly above the national average, with an ACE score of one or more at ages 0 to 5 and at ages 0 to 17. And when you think about it, for children who are born in families where there's IV drug use, sometimes they're coming home from the hospital and having an automatic score of 3 by the time they get home.
Half of West Virginia kids, by the time they're 5, have a score 1 or more, which means they've experienced one of these really horrific things, at least, some sort of violence in the home. These are all really awful things to have anyone experience, and this is before they even start kindergarten.
That's correct, and that's what's happening across the United States.
As a public health crisis, I mean, there's a huge storm brewing right now, right, with the kids in West Virginia affected just by the opioid thing.
Absolutely. That's one of the embedded epidemics. So I like to call the opioid epidemic an epidemic of epidemics. It's not any one thing. It's overdoses. It's hepatitis B, C, HIV. It's the children born addicted, called neonatal abstinence syndrome. And part of that, too, are the children who've been abandoned. But I think, Scott, one of the most important points of all of this is that if we really are serious about addressing the opioid epidemic in our state, we have to be able to have the courage to address the ACEs. We often look at these programs that support children and families as touchy-feely social worker stuff. But this is really the core element, that if we can get this right, we can make a profound change that won't be measured in weeks or months or even years. It'll be measured in generations. But it's the right thing to do, given what we know about the connection between ACEs and the opioid epidemic.
I think a big part of what you're working on is to make sure that people understand that ACEs are not fate and that there are things we could do about that.
We're really trying to advocate for more trauma-informed care. We're trying to coordinate between agencies, and we know that even at the state DHHR, I had a conversation up there that they're really very seriously looking at how to implement trauma-informed care and turning the corner from public health perspective, but also to educate the public about what ACEs are, but not only the public at large, but also healthcare providers who may not know and often are squeezed with 7 to 12 minute appointments. And how do you really delve into the deep personal history of a family or of a particular child or person, yet have a meaningful interaction with them?
I just look at this and get very depressed. I'm hoping you can help me get out of that by the end of the interview, because it does seem like there's this cycle of things that happens, and intervening in that cycle is so difficult. You grow up and you have childhood trauma. The childhood trauma affects your ability to have good health and do well in school. That affects your ability to be able to have healthy romantic relationships. It affects your ability to be able to stay out of jail, to be able to get a job. Then you have kids and the cycle starts all over again. You know, where do you intervene in that cycle, especially when you have very limited resources to do so?
It does appear to be bleak on the surface. But if you're not even asking the right questions, how can you even come to successful solutions? So I think asking the questions around ACEs is the first step. But there are many different things that you can do to strengthen families. Again, having adults engaging mentorship programs, building community-level programs to encourage people to interact more, because we're all tethered to our devices these days, and that leads to a sense of isolation. So real interaction, not virtual interactions, are really powerful in building communities back up. There are all kinds of other programs that are out there available that have been proven to be successful. And I want to highlight one of them that's happening right here in the state of West Virginia, called the Martinsburg Initiative, which was initiated by Chief Mari Richards, who is the police chief for the Martinsburg Police Department. And they are having wraparound services to families at risk based on their understanding of adverse childhood experiences. So this is true trauma-informed care to be able to intervene in that way. So to have a chief of police understanding that this is an important thing if they want to stop the kind of cycle of drug abuse and all kinds of other law enforcement issues that they're having in Martinsburg, I think that's a very uplifting message. And while we often attribute things like IV drug use to poor individual choices, I always bring up the story of the person I ended up talking to. They asked me to see him because of a skin infection. And as I was talking to him, I began to hear about his story of his life, that he was actually very articulate. He's a drummer in a band. And I got around to asking him the question, so why did you start using? Well, his parents shot him up for his 9th birthday party. And so these are things that have happened in people's past that have no bearing to personal responsibility, I don't believe. Now, at the end of the day, he's going to need to make some choices to be able to spin out of the cycle that he's in. But I think if we understand what's really going on in people's lives, it provides us with a way to be compassionate toward them, to understand them, but also to encourage them to do things and doing that in a way that really enables them to be able to step out of that and to be able to escape the shadow of their dark past.
So, Rick, what's your Bible verse or words of wisdom for the week?
Well, listen to this conversation. I couldn't help but think of a couple poems by William Blake that sort of contrast early childhood experiences. They're really short. One is Infant Joy and one is Infant Sorrow. He wrote a book called Songs of Innocence and Songs of Experience. This is Infant Joy. I have no name. I am but 2 days old. What shall I call thee? I happy am. Joy is my name. Sweet joy befall thee. Pretty joy, sweet joy, but 2 days old. Sweet joy I call thee. Thou dost smile, I sing the while. Sweet joy befall thee. So that's one face of childhood, but there's also another, and that's infant sorrow. My mother groaned, my father wept. Into the dangerous world I leapt. Helpless, naked, piping loud, like a fiend hid in a cloud. Struggling in my father's hands, striving against my swaddling bounds. Bound and weary, I thought best to sulk upon my mother's breast. And I think that contrast is the two faces of childhood that, you know, we often have the image of this innocent period of joy, but there's often a lot of other stuff going on there.
And that's Rick Wilson. He is our co-host and from the American Friends Service Committee. We've been speaking with Dr. Mike Brummage. He's the executive director for the Knott Charleston Health Department and a new assistant dean at the WVU School for Public Health. Dr. Brummage, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
And I'm Scott Finn, executive director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thanks for listening to The Front Porch. Take care.
Reputations changeable. Situations terrible. Baby, you're a dope boy. Handle me with care. I'm so tired of being lonely. I still have some love to give. Won't you show me that you really care?
Everybody's got got somebody to lean on. Put your body next to mine.